CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Cam Wells. This first segment is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Don Morse will be giving us an update on autism anglers. So what's the latest with autism anglers?
Oh man, lots been going on. we've definitely continued on our missions with making sure that autistic anglers all over North America have gear to use. And we've been expanding that into fishing trips. So we've been working with some guides and captains all around North America and getting some autistic families out on the water with them. So it's been just continuing our missions and spreading the word and getting our loved ones on the water.
So how do you go about reaching out to the autistic community to let them know this might be something for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're really heavily involved on social media. So Facebook and Instagram, growing Instagram, Facebook, we have a really good presence on there. Our website, autismanglers.org, we reach out through there. And then anybody we find on social media as far as groups, things like that, we always try to participate and answer questions and just, try to get out to the people that are interested in fishing or, or fish now. So.
Anyone who might have missed our prior interview, do you use any modified equipment or techniques for a fisherman with autism?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's not really anything modified. There are certain, there are certain anglers that do need different modifications. But what we recommend is, number one, simplicity. A nice push-button reel if somebody's just beginning. Keeping the gear as simple as possible, not getting too complicated with ultra fast bait casters or anything like that to start. And we always push safety. We always push barbless hooks. Depending on if our angler can swim or not, we want to definitely have a life jacket on them at all times. And the biggest thing is when you are out with an autistic angler is to pay attention to what they are doing. I recommend not even fishing yourself if you are on the water, helping them out. Make it all about them. Find a place that has a lot of action.
So, what are some of the key benefits for them being on the water?
Absolutely. So, what I found working with veterans years ago is fishing is actually very therapeutic. I saw that with veterans with PTSD and, started working with some different autistic individuals, adults and children both, and seeing that it just seems to rewire their brains. Even if just momentarily, it just takes them, out of their normal situations where they may be stressed out or, have anxiety problems, things like that. And it just, it refocuses the, what they're doing, that refocuses their life even just for a short time. And it's very, very therapeutic.
So, in recent memory with autism anglers, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Oh man, absolutely. We get stories all the time from families that have been out, you know, on the water. And it just seems to be, you know, that time where just no worries. I mean, there's always worries, of course, but, you know, we hear it all the time where, man, my child, when he gets on the water, he's completely different. You know, how is that? And it's like, well, you know, the hand flapping stops and he's focused on that red and white bobber floating out there, for instance. And so, yeah, we hear that all the time. Recently, we did have a family that that we had sent out on a fishing trip with a guide, and the guide was able to, they went after redfish, and it really wasn't that great of a trip. So, you know, they went and focused on something a little smaller. They went out and caught grunts, you know, the bait fish, and the young man that they took just had a blast. I mean, he caught like 50 grunts or something like that. He just had a good time, you know, just getting that action, and the smiles were just absolutely amazing. And the captain told me that it was the most amazing trip he's ever had, and all he caught was bait. So just love hearing those stories.
So are there any projects on the horizon for the new year, anything you'd love to achieve for the autistic community?
Yeah, so the biggest project for the new year is definitely growing that the program with the captains. We definitely want to be able to participate and get, you know, get that hands-on, you know, approach instead of just supplying tackle, which it's been amazing. We've sent out over 650 boxes of tackle and fishing rods so far in 2024. So it's been a fantastic year. But, you know, being able to hook them up, you know, hook up the anglers, you know, with a certified captain or guide, that's what I want to grow in the new year for sure. Not only for the anglers, but I always hear back from the guides and captains how it's changed their lives. I mean, it's changed their outlook on anybody with special needs, not just in the autistic community, but anybody that has a special need. And, you know, that it melts my heart for sure.
Do you ever hear stories from families of those who have gone on the fishing trips?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just like the one I just mentioned, you know, they went out, and the young man, like I said, they weren't catching their targeted species, but the captain was just amazing, you know, got them on action. So that was, you know, unfortunately, we haven't been able to do too many of the trips with the captain. That's fairly new for us. But that right there, I mean, that was one of the first ones, and it just, it made me want to do more of that.
So, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about autistic anglers, like their ability to be out there and to participate fully?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hear that, you know, about everybody. And, you know, there are certain times where, you know, it may not be a myth. You know, it depends on the individual. Like, you know, with our autistic loved ones, it's, you know, what they say is, what you've met one person with autism, you've met one. So everyone is a little bit different. So I'm sure that, you know, there are people out there that can't spend a lot of time on the water. Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, you just treat each individual one separately. If they can't stay out of the water, just don't force it. I know we took my son out years ago, and, you know, it was a hot day, and it was slow. We pushed him a little too hard, and kind of turned him off for fishing for a while. So, yeah, it's one of those things. You just got to listen to them, pay attention to their needs, and just make the day about them. So if you need to stop early and go get ice cream, stop early and go get ice cream.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thanks. In this segment of our show, Coco Nicole Daigneau will be sharing her hopes for her yoga program for the year ahead. So, what are your plans for your yoga program for the year ahead?
Well, thank you, Cam, so much for asking. I'm pretty excited about some of the things coming up here in 2025. Primarily, I've begun to teach once again at John McGivney Children's Center. So that's very exciting because for most of the last 4 or 5 years or so, my program has been geared mostly towards adults with special needs. And I'm really thankful to be once again going back to the John McGivney Children's Center and being able to give children and their parents and caregivers some guidance for modified and assisted yoga techniques for the little ones. So that's really great. And of course, I'm continuing to teach at ICHA, and I continue to teach for Community Living Essex, as well as in my own private yoga studio here where I see small groups, private individuals, and just continuing on with all that.
So I'm curious, what sort of differences are there in the techniques you use for modified yoga for adults versus those of children?
Well, you know, basically, everything is so individual. You know, even when I have a group class, I try to really get to know the individual needs of each participant. And, you know, in general, and this is for able-bodied people, of course, but the younger that we start implementing really good patterns, the less likely that we're going to have poor patterns as we age. So I always find when I'm working with somebody who's an adult, who's maybe been, you know, confined to their wheelchair for much of their lives, or, you know, have different AFOs and things like that, long-term patterns settle in. And if I don't meet an individual until they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, it's just a really long process to undo some of those patterns, including even things such as like water retention and, you know, low energy. And those things can really be prevented or at least slowed down if children and parents are made aware of different strategies as young as, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. So even though I incorporate, as you know, a lot of playfulness in my adult-based classes, I really enjoy the playfulness and the innocence of the young kids. And when we get them, you know, moving their tongues and making interesting sounds and stretching different areas of their body and having different playful techniques that just keep the energy flowing through the body, I hope that the children and the parents continue on with those techniques even outside of their yoga practice with me, and they're just so beneficial to prevent certain things from settling in.
So is there any highlight from 2024 that you hope to continue into 2025?
Well, having you in my class, Cam.
Why, thank you.
That's really been a highlight after all these years of suggesting that you participate in yoga. And it's been fun. I know you're there sort of just, you're the cameraman for the online aspect at ICHA. But I have enjoyed seeing you participate, and I think, I hope that you started to see some of the benefits. You know, you've asked me all these wonderful questions over the years, and I don't know, maybe I'll turn the mic around back on you. Do you feel you've benefited at all from participating in those classes? Are you starting to kind of get some of the sense of the things that I've been talking to you about over these years?
Absolutely. I, as a person with a disability, can't necessarily do every move, but I do what I'm able to do, in so much as reaping the benefits that are available to me. And I find
that
you do an excellent job of making sure that there's a variety of movements, so that even if I can't do everything, I can do something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope that you're benefiting from it. But in general, you know, I guess just more and more, you know, after those few years of being so online, you know, in 20 and 21 through 22, there was so much online and not in-person practice. And I was really grateful to all of my participants who continued on with me online through those couple of strange years. But, you know, even just now, still just, you know, in 23, 24, it's just been a slow return back to being in person. And I'm just really enjoying seeing people get back into such the physical effort that we were making prior to all of that, to see the strength returning, to see some familiar faces coming back. So I think the highlight has been just being with people, being able to be more hands-on with people. My own private practice has been building up once again here in my own private studio. So I love seeing so many individuals. I have a lot of private students that I see throughout the week. Sometimes I see people 2 and 3 times a week, and seeing their progress has been really incredible. Maybe, you know, everybody shines. I have wonderful things I could talk about with every student, but what one student is coming to mind right now, I've seen her now all year, 2 times privately and 1 in the group class each week. So she's getting 3 times yoga with me each week. And her strength, her posture are all really improving. Her staff has described that she is much less anxious. She has much better control of her, you know, maybe her quick reactions and her stress. She's got a lot better techniques. She refers to, you know, taking nice deep calm breaths. She'll remind herself that on her own. So those things are really wonderful for me to see and to hear, and to know that she's doing much better. Staff is having an easier time with her. That really just is so wonderful.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, and Cam, as always, if I could just throw out to people my website so they know how to contact me. My website is cocoyoga.ca, and if they can email me with any of their questions, you know, email me if they have a child that's maybe at John McGivney who would like to start up this new program in January. Email me if you have an elderly relative and would like to participate in my classes at Life After 50. I've got so many modified and assisted classes going on out there, and I'd love them to contact me. So my email is coco@cocoyoga.ca. And thank you so much for that, Cam. And I look forward to seeing you again in the new year.
My pleasure. Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we got an update on autism anglers from Don Morse. And we heard a little bit about Coco Nicole Daigneault's hopes for her yoga program for the year ahead. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Hubert Van Niekerk. We'll be sharing his hopes for Every Canadian Counts for the year ahead. So what are some of the plans for ECC for the year ahead?
Well, hello, Cam. Good to be on your show again. I think our major plan for Every Canadian Counts is to get as many signatures on this petition. Every Canadian Council just celebrated their 9th birth, believe it or not, December 31st. So everything that we've sort of done, I think, has sort of culminated into this petition at this time. We feel it's necessary to sort of pull the trigger, I guess, and find out where the interest is and try to push the government into this idea of a publicly funded national disability insurance plan. So I think, if I may, the petition is E-5299 at the Social Affairs and Equality with the Government of Canada. And what that is, just to do a quick read of what the petition says. So whereas many Canadians living with disabilities live below the poverty line, cannot afford necessary disability-related care, it is evident that the financial burden of disability should not be borne solely by individuals living with disabilities or their families or their supporters. And instead, this cost should be shared by the larger Canadian society to ensure equity and support for all people. existing social disability programs in Canada are grossly inadequate in addressing the comprehensive needs of individuals living with disability. It is crucial to establish a federal national disability insurance plan to ensure consistent, reliable, and comprehensive support services across the country, enabling individuals living with disabilities to live independently and with dignity, and to be able to move around the country as they would like. The establishment of the National Disability Insurance Plan will provide essential services, including income support, paid caregiving, home and vehicle modifications, professional services such as physiotherapy, counseling, occupational therapy, on a non-means tested basis, so not based on income, so people don't have to re-qualify all the time and prove how poor they are. And it would help address the high poverty rates and financial hardships faced by many Canadians living with disabilities, ensuring compliance with the Canadian obligation under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Section 7, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and the United Nations International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, and the UN Sustainable Development Goals. The petition goes on to say, we, the undersigned residents of Canada, call upon the Government of Canada to establish a comprehensive federal national disability insurance plan to provide equitable and consistent support for all Canadians with long-term and chronic disabilities.
So
that's the petition in a nutshell, and we started that December 16th, so just a few weeks ago, and we've got, I think, about 225 signatures at the present time. We need 500 for the Member of Parliament, who we've chosen, and then he has agreed to, Mike Morris, Member of Parliament. He's with the Green Party, but this is not a nonpartisan issue, but he's agreed to sponsor this petition, and, you know, over the holiday season, they get 225 signatures. But we are hoping for thousands of signatures. We only need 500 for this to be announced in Parliament. But we would certainly like to have several thousands of signatures on this to really have impact.
So how are you reaching out to the community to ask for their support and getting some more signatures going?
Yeah. That's kind of what I've been doing the last, over the holiday here, is reaching out to our email list. We've got Facebook, LinkedIn, X or Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, you know, so all the sort of typical media outlets. We Instagram as well, as we've had good response with Instagram. We're doing some little video clips on there. That's how we're reaching out. Catherine is doing the Instagram. I'm doing most of the other reach out at the present time. Personal contacts, you know, personal emails, or personal Facebook contacts. Anybody I talk to, I try to get to sign the petition. So it's sort of the time, I think, for, you know, not just people with disabilities, but people without disabilities, because we're just a matter of time before everybody has a disability, generally speaking. So this doesn't just touch people with disabilities or their families. It will touch each individual more likely than not.
So
it's not just for people with disabilities to sign. It's for every Canadian to look at this seriously and sign this petition.
So what would the ideal outcome be if the petition does get through and with the right sponsorship? What would the best case outcome be?
Best case would be that the government would then look at this as something serious that people want in Canada and begin the process of looking at how to establish that national disability insurance plan. So how do we go about it? And that would be, you know, getting more input from the disability community and their supporters to find out exactly how this could be played out. We have sort of a template that Australia has a similar plan. They've learned from their mistakes, and hopefully they did a major review that we can learn from and not make those same mistakes, and create our own Made in Canada plan that would truly support and be beneficial for all Canadians, not just the disability community. We're all headed there.
So
that's, you know, and yeah.
So you could send any message to the community about why this needs to keep pushing forward, what would you say?
Well, it's that we're all affected by disability. And this is by far the largest and more inclusive way to finally get rid of big waiting lists, crossover of so many services, to put things all into one place to say, let's all organizations, all people with disabilities, get behind this with one voice. We're talking about a $40 to $50 billion a year plan here. So it's not something that can be just, you know, shoved off and say, well, this is just a little petition. This will be groundbreaking for the disability community and for all Canadians. It's something that all Canadians will have to accept at some point and say, okay, we don't mind paying a little bit more on our taxes to get the services that we need when we need it. So we get house insurance, we get car insurance, we get boat insurance, we get dog insurance. Why don't we insure ourselves so that if we come across that we have a disability unannounced or at birth or something that you get along the way, that the support is there that you need when you need it.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam.
Of course. Petition Hubert was talking about through Every Canadian Counts might be a great thing for the disability community. A national disability insurance strategy would allow a lot of people to have greater freedom of choice, not just in their finances, but in their caregiver options, and a lot more. But, like many things in the disabilities world, it can be an uphill battle. Getting the public polarized to recognize disability needs and rights, or human needs and rights, can be a tricky thing. However, it gets even worse when one disability group prioritizes themselves over another. If one group says, my disability is more important than yours, we lose focus, we lose progress. However, as a united people, recognizing we all have talents and abilities that interplay off each other, we can make some real progress. Disability community isn't going to get ahead with any sort of infighting. The egos won't accomplish anything. However, working together with our leaders and with those affected in the community, we can recognize not only what the needs are, but what can be done to fill those needs. Individuals with disabilities working together not only provide resources to industry, the education system, they can provide insights as to what's really the situation. It's easy to look and say, oh, we need to do this or that, but if you don't have a practical method of solving the problems in the disabilities world, you don't have real solutions, don't pretend like you do. The first step is always understanding the realities of disability life. Persons with disabilities know what works for them and what doesn't. And starting with that, you can assess the situation and take steps forward. Change is a slow and gradual process, but as long as individuals keep pushing for equal rights and equal opportunities, we will get there as a people. Petition for real change. It's one of the great starting places of disabilities work, I think. Getting people together is to say, I want to add my voice. I want to be a champion of change. I want to be someone who not only has these ideals that the world can be better, but I want to put them into practice. That's something that I really do hope in the year ahead more people take it upon themselves to do, to recognize that it's fine to have the right attitude and the right priorities in the disabilities world, but it comes down to the question, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to make equality a reality and not just a theoretical construct? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.